songs I join. Ooh, cults I join.
Good day, Amarin. How are you today?
And hello to you, Jesse. I'm great today. That was a really exciting start. It's another, every time we are set to record the podcast, it's like a good luck charm for snow, I think, because earlier today, whenever I woke up in the morning, we had a unpredicted like 1.5 inches blanket of snow on the ground. It's been beautiful. All day long, I was happy, cozy, comfy. So can't complain about the way that this day went for me. Not at all.
Little Lorelai Gilmore vibes, loving on the snow.
That's exactly right. I am like a child anytime there's any precipitation of any kind, especially snow. I literally will like click my heels together like Dorothy and I will run through the snow and listen closely as it crunches and just like pick my feet up and down. I like stop people before they interrupt certain snow patterns. I'll be like, hey, that's for us to look at. Please don't walk on that. I am insane. So that is a little sneak peek into what a snow day is like with Amarin Link.
I love that. My thing is pre-big storms. Mm-hmm. Like pre-big storm weather is so like I have to soak up every single second of it. Like if it takes 2 hours to come in, I'm just outside staring at the trees for 2 hours. And if people try to speak to me, I'm like, shut up.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that is aptly spoken, I think, too, as a Midwestern woman, because I don't know. I think maybe you shared something on Facebook about this, actually, Jesse, but there is like this special phenomenon that doesn't exist anywhere in the entire U.S. that I have ever found else, that where the storm is coming in and it's gray and it smells like rain and it's just like the humidity is increasing a lot in the air and it just is like being wrapped in a cool blanket, which is confusing but true. And it doesn't happen like in Idaho. No.
Oh, interesting.
It doesn't happen here. No, it's a Missouri. It has to do with the climate and the humidity in Missouri and certain other places, I'm assuming as well. Like,
because the air gets like really electrically charged.
It does. And that just doesn't happen other places.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I just wanted to call that out because I'm just a huge, huge fan of that weather phenomenon, and I miss it a lot, actually. It makes me kind of homesick talking about it.
Oh, guys, Southern Missouri is not a huge draw, but this is a thing to experience.
It is, and you should, and I don't know. I think there's a lot of draw in the nature of Southwest Missouri.
Well, the Ozarks are lovely. The Ozarks are beautiful, yes. And ancient, which is really cool.
Important note, yes. I love it.
Are the Ozarks not an older mountain range even than the Appalachians? Which are prehistoric.
I think you're right. The Ozarks are very unique in their formation because they're mountains, but the reason that the mountains aren't as tall is because the way that the plains shifted and everything in the formation of the USA, they weren't pushed up. So they're actually still mountains, but they just rest lower, which I think is so, that was like probably a shoddy explanation for a geology expert, but so cool. So cool. And I'm deeply, deeply into it. I actually have several books on the history of the Ozarks and like the formations and the way that all the wildlife is. So I'm a bit of a nut about this, if you will.
You must really be loving that about Idaho, because what a lovely different topography.
Wildly different. Yes. We are surrounded by foothills that are bigger than any of the mountains that I ever saw. the Ozarks. The foothills around Boise are, they're not that tall, but they do look like mountains. You're kind of framed, and then you can see a mountain range pretty much every direction from like a peak in Boise. So it's nice. It's very alpine views. It's not true. Alpine is too high. They're not alpine views, but they are mountain views.
Aw, that sounds lovely. Before we get into today's, have you gotten any farther in the path?
No.
Okay.
I had a, Jesse knows this. I had a, emergency, tooth situation this week, actually. I had a small dental emergency and it has been consuming of all my attention and time. So I have not done anything with it so far, but I am, persevering and hopefully will be intact dentally soon and ready to, watch more of the path.
Well, my best wishes for your face. Let's dive into this week's. Group. I'm pretty excited about it. I've been holding off on this one. I've been like, This one feels like when I got you a cool present and I like, but now I can't tell you. And I just have to look you in the eye and know that I got you a cool present, but not tell you what it is. Yes. That's how I've been feeling the last couple of times, knowing that this cult was coming up. So,
okay.
Yes. All right. I've been trying to figure out how to give you hints about this one, but it's another one that you're not going to guess.
Okay.
So let me preface it with this. All right. It's going to be a windy tale that's going to start out with people who are denim skirt wearing Pentecostals in Bellingham, Washington. Okay. So picture them. They're the denim skirt Pentecostal people, right? They speak in tongues. They do a lot of flag waving, dancing when they worship. Okay. We've talked about this before. This is our kind of church, to be frank. It's that kind of a churchy church, right? But a basic kind of church. So they're going to end up on the other side of the country over a span of a little over a decade. They're going to end up, this group of people, worshiping a goddess and an animal on the other side of the country. Same group of people, quite the evolution.
Okay. Amarin. I'm loving that. Can I ask a question? I don't know what the cult is.
Okay. Yeah. No.
So I have a fun question.
Yeah.
And this is such a random question, and I'm going to explain why I'm asking. You say they're worshiping a woman and an animal.
Yes.
And I want to know, is that animal a cat? Because I feel like that is a great combo of animals to woman is my thing. And I'm hoping that's why one of the reasons you've been excited to talk about it.
Well, so much for my guessing game. It is in fact a cat.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay. I really don't. That's hilarious because unlike sometimes where I'm totally loaded with the answers and I'm just being clever and coy about the way I present them, this was a total shot in the dark. I was just hoping that the answer was cat. So that's fantastic.
It's not her box turtle, it's her cat. I was going to make a reference to the fact that Amarin's cat likes to come in and rub her butt against the camera during our recordings a fair amount of the time. So I was going to use that as a hint.
Oh, yes. My cat deeply, deeply, deeply loves whenever I doesn't like other people at all, confusingly. But if I'm ever in a work meeting or a personal meeting over Zoom, she is so excited to be a part of it and wants to come in and put her face in the camera and talk and watch. It's very weird. So she will definitely be showing up. And since it's a mention of a cat in the episode, we may even get a meow on the track. We'll see.
Oh, that would be lovely. Tell me, since this is our cat episode, what's your kitty cat's name?
Sunny.
Oh, Sunny.
Yes. Aww. Sunny, because she loves to be in the sun. Most cats do, obviously, I'm aware of that, but this one, to an even higher extent, is a sun seeker. So we love that.
Solace and I have two cats at the moment. Their names are Scout and Mr. Cupcake.
Oh, Scout and Mr. Cupcake. I love that.
All right. We love our kitty cats. We could go on and on about this, and perhaps we will at the end. So let's get into it. So this, I pulled out two great published descriptions of this group. One says, this is a great cat. I skipped this part of the quote. This is a great cat service. It may also be home to an end times goddess worshiping cat cult.
Okay.
Here's another one. It's the latest chapter in a complicated mashup of spiritual experimentation, charismatic leadership, and cute cat videos.
Okay. I am liking this already.
Also, I just want everyone to know I got most of my information from two sources. There's a great four-part series about this group on a podcast called The Opportunist, which is a great podcast anyway. Mm-hmm. So I got a lot of info from them. They had a four-point special on this one. And from an article called Apocalypse Meow.
Oh, man.
How a cult that believes cats are divine beings ended up in Tennessee.
Wow. There it was. I couldn't be happier with every piece of information you've shared thus far. I am fully buckled up for today's episode.
Apocalypse Meow.
Apocalypse Meow.
It bears repeating. I think it's the best thing anyone's ever titled anything. So
I think this may be one of the greatest names that we've probably heard. I'm just sad that it's not closer involved with the podcast. I'm sorry. No, not the podcast. The cult itself, because this would definitely rank really high in our all-time podcast ratings for namings associated with cults. But seeing
opportunity lost cult.
It is a what are we going to call it? It's a honorary mention, I guess, or whatever, for a side note. Yeah. Please, let's dive in further.
I think this is such a great title. I'm like, apologies to you, like Hemingway.
I love it.
Nobody gets the award beyond this person. So that, so shout out to, I'm sorry, Bob Smietana. Bob Smietana.
Bob Smietana. What a last name. Love to hear it.
Who came up with this title. All right, here we go. Let's get in here. So we're starting out in a regular old church. Actually, let me back up just a little bit more than this, because a lot of the podcast interviewed this woman's ex-husband. So we're talking about a woman whose name now is Cheryl Ruthven, but at the time her name was Cheryl Walker.
Okay.
So here's this lady. Her name is Cheryl Walker. She's a regular old Karen on the streets. Karen on the streets, Karen in the sheets. She's just a regular lady.
Okay.
Right? So her husband says that she was actually never religious. Their family didn't go to church. They didn't really give much thought to that. They were just mom, dad, kids living their life.
All right.
So she starts attending this church called Gates of Praise in the Washington area. I believe, it was in Bellingham. And it's what we talked about. It's like a regular kind of Pentecostal. I guess that's not regular to some people. Pentecostal is like exciting worship services, lots of dancing, people with silk flags waving everywhere, lots of prophecies, lots of speaking in tongues. That's Pentecostal church. So it was a Pentecostal church, but the regular kind where you spot them in the grocery store because they have a lot of denim on and the long hair with the buns and such, right?
So, yes, I was always mistaken for one of these group members growing up.
Yes, I too can look Pentecostal just with the slightest. I have to really fight it.
All I have to do is remove the part in my hair, comb my hair straight back, and wipe my face of makeup, and I am right back in the long denim skirt.
Yeah. And really, I'm kind of bummed that they ruined it for the rest of us, because now you cannot wear a long denim skirt and not
we couldn't,
as part of that.
I'll say this. We couldn't until last year when the Gen Xers, I must think, began to bring back the long denim skirt into fashion. And now you don't know if someone's incredibly fashionable or Pentecostal, which like, because I enjoy toying that line. That actually might be my fashion aesthetic to a T. Just kidding.
Same. Not kidding.
Okay.
So she starts attending this church kind of sporadically at first, but then she really clamps onto it pretty quickly and becomes besties with the female leader of that church, right?
Okay.
So this is her husband narrating at this point, but these are facts driven home by other people who were in the congregation. So the story goes, so she kind of clamps on to the woman who leads this church. They become besties pretty quickly. Ruthven, who was then known as Cheryl Walker, was very popular in that church. A woman said she was tall, blonde, rich, and had an almost irresistible magnetism. Everybody idolized her. Every woman wanted to be her best friend. She had the gift of prophecy. She seemed to know exactly what people were going through. When she spoke, she'd go into a kind of trance, as if God's voice spoke through her. According to recordings of her prophecies, many followers would arrive at church early just in case she might have a word of God for them. So she really like jumped into the like, oh, you're a prophet. I'm also a prophet. So just she went from not being a religious person at all very quickly to being like, I'm a part of this church. I'm a prophet. So
if I could enter a church at that level, I'd do it too. If I could just be non-religious, if I could just go from non-religious to walking across the street, there's a lot of churches nearby, into one of those churches as like the pastor, I'd do it. I can see what she literally was like, okay, also I'm a prophet. Not only am I praying, I'm a prophet. Hello.
I think you could do it. I think you could tomorrow if you had the time and the inclination, which is what it takes.
I do. I could bear a shocking resemblance to Teal Swan probably if I tried hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's something I want to, it's interesting that you say that you would jump into that if you could, because the question that I found myself asking the most through all of my research is, what's worse, being one of this woman's followers or being this woman? Because I don't want to be her.
I can't. I'm going to write that question down and I'm going to hold on to it for later because I love
it. Okay. Yeah. I could not decide all the way through. So, but something I think is interesting is that everybody, her followers, her enemies, the trail of men she leaves behind her and women. Always describe her as beautiful. They just, they're always like, oh, she's, they always say, she's so beautiful. She's tall. She's blonde. She's so beautiful. I googled her. She's just blonde.
This has happened before.
It happens all the time.
Blonde or bombshell. Not always both.
Yeah.
That's just representation. That's inclusion. It's not intersectional not to point this out.
She's just blonde. That's the whole, that's the beginning and end of it. She looks like a middle-aged woman. She's fine. There's nothing wrong with her, but there's no, I wouldn't pick her out of the grocery store line. She has blonde hair.
Okay, she's blonde. I love it. That's well, good for her. Her presence must have really been magnetic.
I guess. I don't know if I mentioned this. Her hair is blonde. So that's,
she has blonde hair. So
I don't know what else you need to know. So also, I'm not convinced the carpets match the drapes. Again, I don't care, but like, I'm not even sure it's a hair color bestowed on her by God. I think
another question worth asking.
Point being, we can all be blonde.
We can be. It's true.
Yeah. It's accessible to any of us. So I don't, maybe if you're going to be a prophet, get some blonde hair. I'm just putting it up. Write it down, Amren.
I'm writing it down as we speak. Blonde hair. Okay.
Guys, go on. I think she's just miming it. I don't think she really wrote it down. Oh. Okay. In the early 2000s, there was a church split. So the split is top secret to this day, but it was between the two women, Cheryl Ruthven and the leader. And my understanding is that it was actually like a fight between their two sons. Their two sons had some kind of a fight that was enough that the other church leader's son served jail time over it. And whatever that split was, Cheryl Walker at the time. Sorry. I just understand that her name is now Cheryl Ruthven. So I'm just going to probably call her that.
Right.
Cause that's how she rose to her medium fame. So when that church split, most of the congregation followed Cheryl to start a new church, which she called Freedom Fire Ministries.
Okay. Freedom Fire. Okay. Yep. Sounds about right. Okay.
Sounds like a church.
Sounds about white.
Yep. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. It actually, I was in a church years ago before the kind of culty church I grew up in way back. My family used to live in Kansas City and moved to Southern Missouri to join a cult. And so the church that we were in before that, which is now a very big, very popular church, broke my tailbone by paddling me in front of the whole congregation.
Oh my.
And I was like 4 or 5. Which to my parents' slight credit, they were like, we should try a different church. So, but I say that to say it sounds exactly like her church, this place that we were at. And Freedom Fire, I'm sure it was called something almost identical.
I'm certain. Yeah, that certainly makes sense.
So we get into Freedom Fire and almost immediately it gets real culty.
Okay.
So the husband says that at home, she started watching Joyce Myers all the time. If you're not familiar, Amren, are you familiar with Joyce Myers?
Enough, but not
she's a televangelist. She's just a girl. So
it doesn't make it better. Unfortunately,
no, she's a girl. So, so she started watching Joyce Myers all the time, basically to emulate her everything, right? Because Joyce Myers has it figured out. She is rich AF. And that's what this lady was going for, right? Was to be rich AF. Her family was doing pretty well. Her husband was a good provider. But she really was about the money and the power, Miss Cheryl. Mm-hmm. So she watched a lot of Joyce Meyers in building her intentionally built cult, because that's, you know, she was taking some direction there. So her husband at the time describes a moment. So he's at this church with her at this time, right? Because they're a family. He's married to her. They've got kids. So he's going to this church. He's not really into it. He's still like, a year and a half ago, we didn't attend a church. Why are you now the pastor and prophet of this weird church? But like, I guess this is where I'll be, where our kids are. Yeah. So, you know, so he's there, he's at the church, and he describes a day when they're in church and she's already being very prophety. She's already going into trances and she's speaking in tongues a lot, but her tongue speaking is weird. It's like that's right.
Like Harry Potter speaking parcel tongue.
That's exactly. I should have just said that instead of making those awful sounds. That's exactly it.
You did it perfect. If that's right, then you literally did it perfectly. And I would never have you do it another way. Yeah, that was great.
Let's just never have me do it again. But that's, and if you've heard people speak in tongues, that's actually not what they
do. That's not right.
So, yeah. So she was branching out, I think, to make it sound like she's an even better tongue speaker than everybody else, right? Like
she wanted to be different a little bit.
Yeah.
We all know somebody like, well, we don't all know somebody like that. That's the point of the podcast. But Kessie and I, we know somebody like that, I'm sure. Oh, both.
The tongues shower offers. The tongues shower offers. You know, they're in there.
It's like CrossFit. If you meet somebody and it's literally like they will tell you, they will bring it up in conversation. That is like the evangelical CrossFit. And it's like, I don't care. Like, I'm so sorry, but like that doesn't affect my opinion of you at all. And like, maybe that's actually radical to be like, it doesn't change anything about the way that I feel about you, but it like doesn't, I don't know. It's just like, I don't need to hear that about you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's private. Do that on your own time. I don't walk out to people and say like, sometimes I use a baby voice when I talk to my boyfriend, just FYI. I think it's cute. You know, like that's intimate. That's personal. You don't need to know.
I think I told you there's a guy at our market that anoints me with oil kind of regularly and I just go with it. Like,
Yes, I do. I love it.
He also just like, in the middle of conversation, will just drop into speaking in tongues, like, or like as he's talking to himself, like, all right, well, good to see you. Ah, shandalana, like, all right.
Bye.
I don't know that the Holy Spirit is that invested in this moment in this market, but okay.
I love that. Wow. Yeah. Everything you said. Okay, fun.
So her husband describes a day at church when she reenacts a birth on stage, so much so that she gets down on the ground, she puts her legs up in the air, and she moans and yells and writhes as if in labor.
Okay.
And then finally stand, because you know how when you give birth, you, as the daughter of a midwife, you know that when you give birth, you stick your legs just straight up in the air.
Oh, yeah.
For a visual. Everybody knows that. It's so helpful with gravity.
What I like to do is complicated yoga positions. when I'm laboring, I sometimes like to do like a snake twist, leg up over the shoulder, maybe. Mm. That helps for ease of that. Yeah. No, that's not what happens. So crazy to pretend. The full crow. I like to do the crow. The crow really opens it up down there for me.
That would actually be a better position.
Honestly, that actually is a good suggestion. If you were physically able, I would be like, yeah, maybe that would help. I don't know.
Stuff wouldn't hurt. Yeah.
Probably been done before or attempted. I'm not sure. Please let us know if you've attempted that. Yeah, we'd
ladies,
love to hear.
You're welcome for the birth tips. Got them right here.
Just two ladies that a lot about labor, and here we are sharing tips.
Everybody knows you come to Cultside Join for birth tips.
That's right. It's one of our, I have it listed as a subcategory of the podcast. Lifestyle birth hacks.
So he says she moans and yells and screams with her legs in the air, and then she gets up and says, "You all have just witnessed a birth. Something has now been birthed from me into this congregation that will change the world."
I'm out.
So was her husband. He stood up and said, he stood up and laughed out loud and said, "You guys don't drink this Kool-Aid."
Really? Straight
yeah.
up?
Yeah.
Oh no. King. Respect. That put some respect on my man's name. What was his name?
Good question. You know? Oh, dang.
It's okay. We'll show him due respect. You got to respect somebody calling out the bullshit. It's That's Mark. Hilarious. Mark.
It's Mark.
Yeah. All right. A good one. Good to hear that.
Yeah. Listen, Mark got fucked for this. Like,
I'm certain it didn't go well after that. Yeah.
It was
I'm unpleasant. Worried. Let's.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just like there, I listened to some recordings. They're very zealous about recording everything in their church. So there are lots of recordings you can go find. And it's just very much like you'd think it would be. Like, I wrote down, there's one where she's like, "I call down a fire. I call down a fresh wind, a mighty wind." Like, it's stuff that you always hear. Do you always hear this? You're making faces. Yeah.
Oh, yes. No, I'm in agreement. I was just like nodding along. Mm-hmm. Yes. Like really getting into it. Like,
yeah,
I was agreeing. But it looked like confusion because this may shock you, Jesse, but I was faking it. I did not agree.
So when her husband stood up and said, "Don't drink the Kool-Aid," she basically broke up with him in her mind right then. She was already on her way out. She was already edging him out.
Right.
But so she, so her next move was she, after he did that, like the next week, she moved a church member into their house and had that church member sleep on the floor in their bedroom and like be around her at all times. So, and the church member was like taking notes. Right.
Okay.
So Mark, the husband, fully understands what's going on. He's like, okay, you've become a cult leader. You're trying to leave me and you're trying to establish that I'm abusive so you can take my fucking kids, right? Because she'd already started like alienating the kids from him, right?
Right. That makes sense.
So he understands what's going on. And so he calls this woman the witness because that's her role, right? It's to witness him being abusive so that they can then document it. So he's real, real conscious to like not come within 3 feet of her. Right. Like to never raise his voice, to not get baited by her fight starts, to just be like, "Okay, sounds good. All right. I'll be over here," quite visible.
Right.
And so he said, if like sometimes they'd get in a little spat about something, he'd say, "Hang on. Do you want me to call your witness so that she can come witness us fighting and jot that down? I don't want to make her miss anything. The witness."
Perfect. Very good.
Yeah. But because he wasn't taking the bait, one day, as he says, and later as the witness actually corroborates, one day they were just out of sight of the witness and she just leapt back and yelled, "Ow, you pushed me." And then she called the police and said that he pushed her and he spent a night in jail and the witness corroborated it. And then they went to court and luckily for him, the judge was like, "This lady's crazy. You can have half custody."
Oh,
which
good.
Is nice. Yes.
That's
smart. The witness did speak against him, but she later left the church and made public statements saying that's the thing she felt really bad about. She directly lied in court.
Okay.
And, you know, nothing bad happened. So,
right. Okay.
That's not just his side of it. The witness corroborates that. Ultimately, what this meant was that their youngest daughter at the time, their boys were. They had two boys that were teenagers, but almost adults, or maybe they were adults, but their youngest daughter was 13.
Okay.
So now this woman is still tied to this guy for like 5 more years. She can't, he's got 50% custody, so she can't just brainwash her kid or take him away from her or, you know,
right.
what have you. So she doesn't like that. So in the settlement, she gets $500,000 from him. But she still goes to her church and says, "My husband has left me destitute." And so some of her other followers, just a man and a wife, buy her a whole ass house.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We'll circle back to that because that matters later. But she pocketed that $500,000, told her church she was destitute and her husband left her and you know, ruined all their lives and took a whole bunch of money from them. So.
Gotcha.
Now. The church believed that Ruthven wasn't just an ordinary pastor, but instead she was the prophet of God. and they began to be told and to believe that they must tie themselves to her so that they would not lose favor with God. Because if you lost favor with her, you lost favor with God.
Okay.
She started claiming to be a prophet. Then she claimed that she was the reincarnated Mary Magdalene. And then she was the new Messiah. She started making followers kiss her feet. Oh. And hang on. Drink her blood in communion ceremonies.
Wow. That one's too far for me.
I feel that, like that's that not got a gray me. Area. Yeah.
That got me right out of the gray and into the no-no land. Yeah, that's pretty gross. I'm not on board for any of that. I was going to say it out loud, and then I was like, I don't even want to say it. No vampiric communion for me.
Yeah.
Blech, no thanks.
Say I.
Yes. Much like the bleh, you know, like I feel like that's the cartoon vampire yeah. noise.
By the way, you know who didn't make people drink his fucking blood? Jesus. Jesus was like,
such a good point.
Wine and this metaphor.
No, yeah. Jesus was big on actually the metaphor in the Bible. Yeah. You know, like he just did the thing, and then they were like, I think that might have been a metaphor. He wasn't like he wasn't like, see this? Literally my blood.
You know? No, that's a little different.
Yeah, so
this is more subtlety if you're going to be on the Jesus level, ma'am.
Yeah, so she would pass around grape juice, but she would cut herself visibly and drip blood into the. I know.
Yeah. No. Okay. Gotcha. Hate that.
It gets worse.
I bet it does. Okay.
All right. So then Cheryl watched some History Channel thing and saw these archaeological photos of jars. That were found in a cave that were from the time of Mary Magdalene. And she writes to her people. She is a big emailer. She's an emailing cult leader, which I think messes underrated. With my idea of aesthetics for cult leaders. But
yeah, I love email. So that actually, she's back up a point.
That's actually how you'd lose me out of your cult, because if you're just CCing me on stuff, I'm just not opening it. I would be like, oh, I missed
fair.
It.
That's fair. If you did like
that,
you'd need to be pretty active in the emailing habits for it to hook me. Like it couldn't just be like a BCC, a CC. That's not going to work. I'm going to need more individualized color coded content. But okay, a couple more notes. I have apparently a lot of notes to provide for Cheryl. I have a lot to say.
God forbid she send it to my Yahoo account. I'm never going to see it.
Okay. That's true. Okay.
So she emails all of her people and says, and she likes to really talk in a way of like, she talks like it's the King James Bible in all of her prophecies, which is silly because that was written in like, what, the 15, 1600s?
It's much not, time has passed. So yeah, much time.
It's not like an Aramaic. You know, which
no,
is, but so she talks like that in her email. So she says, I saw these jars that were of the time of Mary Magdalene, and I recognized them as my own. I knew them as my own, which is her telling them that I am Mary Magdalene, and those were my makeup jars that they unearthed. They're mine. I recognize them.
I found them. There
now
they are.
I know that I'm Mary Magdalene, and they're all like, oh, so.
They're open to it. They say, that's sure. It. Okay.
They're not just open to it. They're all in. So another thing that she liked to say all the time is that we're on the brink. We're on the brink of the end of the world. We're right at the cliff's edge, right? Which every cult, everywhere, all the time, you're always on the brink because it's such high fucking drama. It's such high drama. I'm so tired of it. I'm not interested in the end of the world timeline. It's nothing but stressful. There's nothing I can do about it.
No, it's just a fear, it's a constant fear cycle.
Yeah, no, it never ends. And I was listening to our Ruby Ridge episode yesterday, just going through it for notes. And I'd mentioned in there that when Ruby Ridge happened was when I stopped being on board with my church's apocalyptic stuff because I realized we couldn't outgun the government.
Right.
And so this was all just a waste of time. And so I feel that way. I just don't know how people constantly jump on the apocalypse bus because it's always apocalypse o'clock. It's always apocalypse o'clock.
Yeah. It is. It's never chill. It's constant. And I don't want to step on any toes, but I saw a little Facebook fight about this week among some of connections that I have who were talking about it. They were like, I don't know, subtweeting, I think is the word we would use to each other, but they were on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So that was basically like one of them was like, the revival is here. God is back. Like, it, the time is now, basically, which doesn't necessarily sound like end of the world rhetoric, but it is.
That is
literally end of the world rhetoric. That's what they mean. If you don't know that, you probably just don't know the full theology attached to the things that are signaling or pointing to. And so that's what's happening. And then another friend that I have, obviously, that's connected to this person, made a fully different status, was like, I'm so tired of Christians saying the world is going to end every 20 minutes. It's not going to end every 20 minutes. And then the other person that made the original post, they made a new post and they were like, I am so tired of people mocking me. And it was just... It was literally like this, and it was amazing because they were never commenting on the other person's post, so this is pure speculation, but it was very clearly, like, they were clearly using the same words back and forth, and all the posts are still up, so I could just go bounce back and forth and follow the line. Anyway, shout out to you ladies. I know you're not listening to this podcast, but wherever you are, hope you're fine, and I'm with you, lady number two. The end of the world thing happens constantly.
Just for centuries. That's why I'm like, can we take a break?
Can we please?
Can we take a break?
Yeah.
I was complaining about this to my Amish friends the other day, and they agreed with me.
You know, that's a sign that you're on the right you're on the right track for sure. I love it.
They were like, well, yes, the Bible says you can't know the time. So that's the end of the discussion, which, you know what? No,
that right. is for me too, the end of the discussion. I say this to people all the time. I said this when I was growing up. It really annoyed a lot of old people, but hey, don't question the youth. They're wise. The Bible says that. And anyway, I would just repeatedly be like, okay, but the Bible explicitly said you will not know the time. So by identifying the time, you just remove this as a possible end of the world moment.
I thought the same thing growing up.
And so on. Like, what?
You adults are confusing me. All right, here we go.
Anyway, kids get it. So, let's go.
A church member describes her first time walking into the Freedom Fire Ministries. She said, it felt like a waterfall when I walked into Cheryl's church. I felt alive again. Just being in her presence was like a spiritual high. I feel like I was experiencing God's love firsthand. I came to believe that my salvation depended on being under Ruthven's spiritual oversight or covering, which we know... The covering of your church is always the thing that you are terrified to lose. I was like, I finally arrived at who I was and who I was supposed to be following her teachings and learning to be like her. Ruthven claimed to have a direct contact with God and to be speaking God's words. No one was allowed to disagree with her. Anyone who disobeyed was banished. So she's a real big banisher, which is what keeps her power really strong.
Okay.
One follower said she knew how to put the fear of God in us. So, for example, there's a family in her church. Their 16-year-old daughter was caught drinking. She was grounded at first, but then Ruthven told her parents to get rid of her. So they took their daughter into the backyard, joined hands in a circle with her brothers, and cast her out of the family.
Oh.
They said, we give the devil permission to overtake her and bring her to his side. She is no longer covered with our covering. She is on her own. You may now take her.
Oh, well, that's just light and easy. Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. That's really dark. That's really hard to hear. Good gracious.
Yes. So she would regularly do that to anybody that she felt like was going to be problematic in either taking away resources, pulling focus, pretty, anything that was like going to be a problem for her. She would have people banished like this. One stunt she pulled, which I just think is redonk. So one day, everybody came in to meet at the church, and they were locked out of the sanctuary and could only be in the foyer. And they had to wait for like an hour in the foyer, right? So they're all like waiting and chatting and being like, oh, why are we locked out here?
Right.
There's some shuffling and banging. And then Cheryl opens the doors, and she's like, we've been attacked by demons.
Oh.
All of the furniture in the sanctuary had been flipped upside down.
Oh.
Now, missing during this hour was Cheryl, her adult sons, like two male elders.
No, well, people, that's probably not correlated though, Jesse. So I don't know why you'd bring that up.
I don't either. I'm just telling you random details,
including random facts, I guess. Okay, keep going if you have to.
So she said that that was a demon that was in the church, right? That had attacked them, and everybody was like, "Oh, it's getting real now."
They were like, "Yeah, okay,
yeah, wow." So again, we'll circle back to that demon and who that demon was later. But yeah, I just feel like, do better, Cheryl. Plan this on Saturday night. Like, I just
make an effort just ahead of time if you could.
Be a better cult leader.
I need you to try a little harder. That's all.
We're embarrassed for you.
Look, we're people. There's few groups of people that would look at you and say, "I'm seeing something missing here." And
you could cult it up better.
You could cult it up better. There's a better blueprint. You know, there's few people that are qualified and interested in saying that. We are your worst nightmare. We're here to line you up against other leaders of similar groups and tell you you're really scoring low. You're scoring really low. This is bad.
Cheryl, I don't want to cult shame you, but you could really be cultier.
Cheryl.
You could do better.
You could do better all around. All around. That's
better
all.
Plan these things. All right. Now, money was a big, 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 big thing for her. So she had everybody tithing, obviously.
Right.
But she would regularly talk about how, you know, well, tithing is the bare minimum. And you really like, you know, that's not an offering. That's just your required tithe. And it would be way better if you obviously offered more. But she would also, holy shit, have people in her congregation adopt special needs children. Because you get a massive tax return when you do that, like tens of thousands of dollars. And then when she knew, I'm talking like multiple special needs kids in people's houses. And then when the taxes came, she would say, "Okay, give me your tax return." And when they would try not to, she would bill them from the church. "Okay, well, here's your part of the utility bill. It's $30,000, which is the amount of your tax return."
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So people actually adopted special needs children for the tax credits in her church.
Hard to hear it, but I do believe that that does happen. And yeah, that's a thumbs down from me as well. Yay.
yeah. I mean, you know, at least these were like Christian people, probably being in their family was as good as anything else. Probably like it's hard to be adopted out as a special needs kid, so you know, that's nice, I guess, but like not great motives.
I do, as much as I do appreciate the group of people that protest the loudest about abortions and pregnancy prevention, I do appreciate when they do adopt children.
True.
There is one note I would add. It is not for the tax benefits, though, is not usually the way that I choose to appreciate those people. So anyway, no, thumbs down. I hope those kids are okay. I'm very interested to know if they are. Might have to do a little research on that. Yeah.
We'll never know. There's no information.
Oh, oh no.
But I will say this other thing, though, which is that like when you get a $30,000 tax break for adopting a child, generally, you're spending that $30,000 on that child because they have special needs. That's why you get the tax break. Like they cost money, which is why it's hard to adopt them, right? Like they need whatever therapies that they need. That's what the tax break is supposed to provide. So that means that not only is this woman having people adopt children for this tax break and then taking the money, like now they're paying for those needs of that kid.
Right.
So that's exciting. She also would have elaborate costume parties constantly, and she would force her members to participate in the parties. So they had to buy full costumes of what she would have spy party night. So you'd have to have an elaborate, "I'm a spy from the 30s costume. She would have sock hop nights, and everybody had to buy poodle skirts. She would have, like one time she emailed her whole congregation like 2 days before church and said her service on Sunday was going to be about monkeys and bananas. So they all had to get a monkey costume and come dressed as monkeys, which they did. So
interesting and totally not problematic.
So it's like a constant demand, not just for them to give her money, but also for them to just be spending money for like random shit she thought would be fun, I guess, for her. And listen, again, I'm super pro costume and I love a sock hop, but it has never occurred to me I should force my friends to participate.
No, I don't think that is necessary at all. No. Hilarious. Wow.
Yeah. Also, she started taking a lot of international vacays because Cheryl likes to travel. She likes what she likes. She really enjoys Italy. So she told her followers that she had to constantly be going to Italy and then Scotland because she was, and I quote, breaking strongholds, like demonic. So all of Italy is demonic because they're Catholic. Let's not forget that. And then everybody else just has demons everywhere, right?
Right.
So she was breaking demonic Catholic strongholds in Italy, which meant that they constantly had to fly her to Italy. And then she would demand that like large chunks of her followers go with her, right? So when people wouldn't shell out for like $5,000 a person to go to Italy with her, she would make sure that they were extremely punished. So we'll get back into that in a minute too. But so she was just taking like multiple international vacays every year, fully on this church's dime because she was breaking strongholds.
See, now I'm in again. I'm back in. I'll join the cult if I can just go to Italy and not do anything but say that I'm breaking strong. Like I can break all kinds of things in Italy for free. You know, like let's go.
But you got to keep it up around the clock. See, this is where I start to think like, I don't actually want this gig. Like she can't break character.
Yeah, but how often this is a real question.
I guess she can in Italy, but.
Right. That's my thing though. Is it's like, it seems like she's doing a character most of the time, but then also like, is she constantly around these people? And if she's not, if she only has to do it for like business hours, then this is just like her job. The con is like a job and it has incredible benefits.
Amarin, you've pulled me back in a little bit. I hear what you're saying.
You hear
and
it?
I validate it.
Girl boss gate keep gaslight.
I have that written down. It's so good.
It's one of my favorites. It's a great one.
Well done. All right. So now is where they actually start to veer off the tracks of Christianity altogether. Right. So now she's got her she's got her money going well. She's got her international vacays set up. You're right. She is on business hours because let's remember most of her communications are via email. Right. I forgot to mention this one. Maybe it's in my notes somewhere later on. But she also, in setting up her cult, decided that she needed a really good worship leader because that's a really big part of especially an evangelical cult. And she was pulling evangelical people specifically. And so the girl that was really talented as a worship leader that she wanted, she knew she was gay. And this girl had not come out, but she could see that about her.
Yes.
So she developed a sexual relationship with her.
Ah, good.
So that this girl would be her worship leader and write worship songs about her as the Magdalene, which they sang when they bowed at her feet. So that was another part of
it. So there was creative strategy involved in this for sure. Wow.
Quite
that's outrageous.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Then eventually she stopped sleeping with this girl. You know,
as would happen.
Because she isn't into girls. Like this was a manipulation tactic.
Yeah.
But now this girl is hooked, right? And now this girl has been dumped. And you know what you do with people who dump you? You fucking follow them around and hope they'll fucking validate you. So
right. Yes. Okay.
No shade to that girl. That's what we all do.
It's it's all part of the natural process, right?
Yeah. So, all right. So now they start to go off the rails away from Christianity altogether. And I'll say, here's an evolution of their church name. So they started out as Gates of Praise with the other church that was not Cheryl's church. That's a church she joined and then like parasited onto and took all the people. So that was Gates of Praise. Then they go to being Freedom Fire Ministries. Let me stop right here. Then as they get more culty, they change to Moriah Ministries. And Moriah is the name of the mountain that Abraham went up when he was supposed to sacrifice his son.
Uh-huh.
So They start getting super messianic, is their first step away from just Christianity, which is a very common cult step to take when you're veering off of Christianity into cultiness. Almost always, it seems like the first step is that you get real messianic.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's a very fair call out.
Yeah. So it says that. So they became Moriah, and then eventually they were like new age cat worshippers. So at that point, they become the Oneness Foundation, right? But right now they're Moriah, so they're actually locking down into more traditionalism right now. So her church members had to actually change their beliefs to conform with her prophecies. So she would have people record her prophecies, and then later on, that she would have them go over her prophecies and basically like shift their beliefs to make her prophecies from a year ago be true.
To align. Right. Okay. Yeah.
So at first the changes were small. They stopped celebrating Christmas and Easter and instead focused on Jewish holidays. By 2005, they changed their name to Moriah Ministries. Soon beliefs from other faiths and spiritual traditions were added. Worship services now opened with Tai Chi and Buddhist meditation. Now, you would get me in with this. If I get a nice blend of Tai Chi and Buddhist meditation with like the speaking in tongues that I'm familiar with, I'm into it.
What a wonderful intro to the day. Yeah. Now that a plus, another point. Yeah.
We're back on the board, baby.
Okay, good. I'm glad we're together on this. After that came teachings about chakras and healing crystals, Tibetan singing bowls, ancient Egyptian gods like Osiris and Isis, the Greek goddess Athena, and a host of New Age-like practices. Now, I will say at some point, I would kind of feel like this is too much watered down everything, and I'm no longer interested in this. Like, that's too many ingredients that don't go together. There's this great scene in, have you seen the movie Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
I have, yes.
So fucking brilliant. And so, okay. Who's the super hot British guy?
Oh, no. Russell Brand.
So he's the dopey rock star, and he's got like different, like conflicting religious ideology tattoos all over his body. And when the girlfriend is breaking up with him, she's like, all of your tattoos are conflicting religious ideas. They're stupid. It's bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. And that's how I feel about this part of the church, like this phase, feels like a bunch of conflicting tattoos.
That's fair. Yeah, this is like the Chipotle bag marking church at this point, covered and lots of just random stuff.
Correct. Yeah.
Controversial. So
that's what's going on there. Eventually the group renamed itself the Oneness Foundation and settled in as being that. They talk a lot about like powerful karmic moons, but also Yom Kippur, but also Judgment Day.
Ah, yes.
The group's worship songs also reflect their mix of beliefs. They range from familiar church hymns like Great is Thy Faithfulness to songs of praise to Ruthven, who by now is claiming that she is the reincarnated Mary Magdalene. So here are some lyrics from one of their church songs, assuming you already know the lyrics to Great is Thy Faithfulness, which is an old God church.
I do.
Athena spreads her wings and lifts her staff. This is their church song.
Okay.
After singing Great is Thy Faithfulness, Athena spreads her wings and lifts her staff. She opens up the door and says, come in. I recognize you. You are Magdalene. You have the power to recreate Eden. So come in, Magdalene. So come in, Magdalene.
That sounds very nice.
Yeah, it does. I feel like
if it wasn't totally insane.
Yeah, no, I would be like, oh, this is a fun church.
It's a fun church song. Yeah. I mean, like, if you don't have to think at all about what they're saying and you're just like, pretty word. I like that part. I like pretty word sounds. Yes.
Also, like, there's no character in history I like more than Mary Magdalene. None.
No. That is one thing I will say that is tough about this is that you do really get me with the divine feminine. And if you like lean in to the divine feminine and you bring in like divine females from different like traditions and combine, see, like you'd get me. But then there's just so many other bad things happening at the same time with this group.
Yeah, it's a tough one. If there were a Magdalene church within a tri-state area, I'd be there.
Yep. This is where, but see, there are churches that are, it's too far, we can't get into this, but there are archetypal churches for Mary Magdalene type things that exist. You know what I mean? Because that's like, it exists. Hecate
and
the like.
I'm about some Mary Magdalene. You know I love her. Listen, oh, yes. Sex worker / Amishy girl.
Big fan of Mary Magdalene.
Yeah. Okay.
Makes sense.
Ruthven's followers also bowed down to her during worship. Once she claimed to be a messiah figure, they also drank communion juice tinged with her blood. Ruthven would prick her finger and drip blood into the communion cup, which was filled with grape juice, and they'd all drink. We've gone over this, but it bears repeating. She then made all of her followers become vegans as part of their focus on being one with Mother Nature. They also began to volunteer at local animal shelters as part of their religious practice. Now, okay. I'm about to get to the cats, but give me a minute. Mm-hmm. Cheryl also loves getting married. So several times in here, she's got some marriage stuff going on within the church. So First, she breaks up with the husband with the witness, right? So This is in the context of this like cultiness evolving and their beliefs evolving and all of these things. And she's like kicking out people who disagree with her. Yes. And she's going on these expensive vacations all at the same time. She's also getting married several times. So she marries. So first of all, she's married to Mark, who she started out with. Then he stands up and tells people not to drink her Kool-Aid. So she divorces him in a kind of spectacular way, gets $500,000 settlement, and starts brainwashing her kids against him immediately. They do come to the point where, like, even at his house, they won't speak to him. And she encourages others of her followers to also divorce their partners who aren't on board enough and to encourage their children not to speak to their parents, which does happen. And most marriages that she has broken up, the parents and children, the children are still in the church as adults and they have not spoken to their parents in over a decade. Ah,
I see.
Unfortunate. Let's see. I told you about the witness part, going through my notes here. So now she's divorced from him. But she talks about him constantly and she has the whole church, including her children, pray for his death.
Oh.
Like it's a very regular part of their prayer, including her children, that they pray for this man's death.
Yikes.
Right. One might suggest that she was, that's a way to ask people to kill someone.
Some people might tell you that that is borderline criminal. Yeah. Yes. They might be 100% right to say that also.
Yes. So let's harken back for a moment to when the demon flipped all the tables upside down and all the chairs upside down. Mm-hmm. This demon, she says, she had a bestie whose name was Marine and was married to this other guy. I forget his name, but Pete, her husband's name is Pete. Okay. So Marine and Pete were besties with Cheryl. They're very, very rich. I believe he's an anesthesiologist.
Okay.
After Cheryl divorces her husband, she is now single. The $500,000 was not enough money for her. The tithing is not enough money for her. Then paying all her bills and vacations is not enough money for her.
Okay.
So she turns to Pete and Marine, and she says, Marine is the one who's actually sleeping with demons.
Okay.
And that's why all of our furniture got flipped off, because Marine is a hooer and she's sleeping with demons. And Marina was like, oh, what the shit? I don't think I'm sleeping with demons. And she was like, no, you are. You're a whore.
You're a dirty whore. Okay.
And by the by, Marine and Pete were the ones who bought her a house in cash when her husband left. They bought her a house. So now she's like, so sorry, Marine. Pete, you're going to have to divorce Marine because she sleeps with demons and they messed up our sanctuary. And he's like, yeah, I guess I will have to. And so then she marries Pete. She says, oh, God wants us to get married. And Marine stays in the group and attends the wedding and blesses their union and all of the things.
Okay.
So now she's married to Pete. So then Pete, not too long into this, tells his wife, Cheryl, that he had a dream about their kids. And she says, oh, Pete, that actually means that you're a pedophile. And so you can't be exposed to the children anymore. So you're actually going to need to move to a different state and never see the family or the church again. But I will need alimony. And that's going to be $48,000 every month.
Every month?
Wow. Or you'll die in the apocalypse because I'm the prophet. And so Pete says, okay.
Somewhat on her for the whole... Wait, sorry. Somewhat on them for the whole getting involved in the first place thing I would say.
It's a string of poor choices.
It is a string. I'm still very upset with what I'm hearing, but I do have to say that step one is never getting involved with this wild woman to begin with. Please continue.
Yeah. So he says, okay. And Amarin, to this day, they are married and he sends her $48,000 a month. This is a decade ago.
All right. Wow.
More than that. They're still going strong. And by going strong, I mean, he has not seen her in many, many years. He lives in Colorado. He just sends her checks.
Well, there are moments of the story that I'm like, she seems to have it figured out. This is one of those. I'm just kidding.
Not bad work if you can get it. So now she meets another guy who is kind of just a sweet dopey hillbilly from Tennessee. And she decides she's going to marry him. So she tells him, oh, God has chosen you as my husband. You should come out here and marry me. And he's like, okay. So he goes out and he marries her in the church. She is not divorced. Everybody in that church knows she's not divorced. Everybody understands the situation. So they host a completely fictitious wedding. The only person who thinks it's a real wedding is poor Rick, who she's marrying. He thinks he's legally married, because why wouldn't you think that?
Be under that assumption, too, if I had a wedding, to be fair. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he signed a contract that she Xeroxed off and whited out somebody else's.
Yeah, it was like he should have known whenever it was a white erase board contract that this wasn't a legit marriage.
But he's not thinking about that because, as he tells us, she's tall, blonde.
Because she's just really beautiful. And I haven't looked her up because I don't want to, because I actually feel more complicated when we talk about people if I have seen them, because then I feel like I actually am making a statement. So I still feel comfortable sort of laughing jovially about the fact that people are this into blondie. A lot of power in a blonde head.
She has blonde hair. It can't be denied. So here's what happens with Rick. She immediately starts telling him about how abusive Mark is, because remember, she still can't leave the area because of this child custody agreement, right?
Right, of course.
So she's got everybody praying that her husband will die. She's now prophesying or that her ex-husband will die. She's now prophesying that he's going to die, right? Which also means like somebody's got to fulfill that, right?
Or else she's not really the prophet. That's the best part, is that she's really putting all of her eggs on this one.
Yeah. Wow. She is all in. So she starts telling Rick how awful it was and how abusive he was, you know, which is what women tell men when they want to turn them into human weapons.
That's right.
So then in the wedding vows, they hex her ex-husband to death.
Well,
you know, something you want in your own wedding. So romantic.
Look to include that in your own ceremony. Have a torrid relationship with an ex-lover. No problem at all. Hex them in your ceremony.
Write it into your wedding vows. Can't think of a better time to bring it up.
No better way to start a new relationship on the right foot than by immediately talking about the last person that you dated.
And how great you were as a partner, clearly.
So many people follow this advice in real life, too. Amazing. Please pay attention to your own married lives.
Immediately after marrying him, she buys an AR-15. Again, I'm just throwing out random facts.
Definitely not correlated.
Yeah. So then she has her new husband and her kid, her male, now adult sons, go out and do heavy target practice, constant target practice. And she keeps moving the targets farther out, making sure they can really sharp shoot, telling them how good they are at it. And then every time they're done with target practice, She drives them out to target practice and drives them back. And every time they are driving back, she goes out of her way to drive past her ex's house and describes the layout of the house every time she drives past.
Reminiscing.
So
there's my ex's house. When you come in the doorway, you take a left and that's the kitchen. Then you pass through the right hand door. That'll take you to the walkway that takes you to the pantry. And then after that, I'm done.
What you're going to want to do is go to the end of the hall.
Hang a left. That's the basement stairway.
That's the master bedroom.
No, yes. Yes. Oh, good. Wow.
So Rick is also interviewed in this because Rick is now out of this group. And Rick is like, yeah, I'm actually not that stupid. I understood what she was suggesting.
You did? Oh, good for you, Rick. Sounds like you really put your big boy pants on and pieced together a tough puzzle.
Yeah. So he, in fact, does go to their house with the AR-15 to kill. And she was very clear. She doesn't just want her ex-husband dead. She wants his new wife and their children dead. And the dog.
Oh, what?
And the dog.
Okay, so that's now, okay. Obviously, I was being facetious and we crossed the lines like a long time ago, but this is a really big line. And now I'm feeling very upset. I know you're a cat person, but that's too far, ma'am.
Right. You don't have to murder the dogs.
Wrong.
The cats don't want that.
The cats, even if they do, that's not a rule.
That's not a good excuse.
You know better. You know better. Okay, Cheryl.
So ultimately, he does go there to kill them. He brings the AR-15 and then he looks at them and he's like, what the fuck is happening in my life? Which is a great, great thing to realize before you pull that trigger. And he did. So he goes back to her and he says, yeah, I understand what you're setting me up for. I'm not into it. I'm not going to do it. So she's like, okay, well, then we're not married anymore. And I also curse you to death. And he's like, peace, bitch. But he actually to this day believes that she has very strong powers. He believes that she has her energy is so strong that she makes people throw up in the grocery store around her. He says he's witnessed this. I find it difficult to believe. I know she's blonde, but I just don't know that goes that far.
It's a unique response. It's a particularly strange one. I've met a variety of powerful women in just a few different ways. Never vomited.
Mm-mm, same.
No. Yeah.
I am sometimes perceived as a powerful woman.
I would say so.
I have not let anyone, to my knowledge, I have not made anyone throw up.
No.
I'm
a little insulted at this time. I'm going to have to think on this a tiny bit.
Her energy is just that strong. To me, I read this as how I understood things in my own culty church growing up. Like, this sounds to me like a story this bitch tells. Oh, my energy is so strong. It just made people throw up at the grocery store. And then it's taken in so much that like a person believes it and they need to just like, they don't know how to unbelieve it. That sounds like what that is to me. So nothing against you, Rick. I think that this is a story you absorbed from her and you can't unbelieve it, but maybe I'm wrong. And maybe she has an amazing pukey energy, which I actually don't think is an endorsement of a person.
Right.
So there's that.
There is
all right.
That.
So here are some more inside the church problems. She's constantly excommunicating people. Another woman who was inside of her church had a boyfriend and she wanted to secretly move the church from Washington State to another state because she didn't like the bad press she was getting.
Okay.
And so this woman mentioned to her boyfriend on the phone that they were thinking about moving to another state. The boyfriend wasn't in the church. And the woman's sister ratted her out to Ruth, or to Ruth Finn, Ruth, to Cheryl. Because people constantly ratted each other out to her because they were trying to be in with her, right? So they would rat each other out to her. So this woman's sister ratted her out for saying, oh, the church might move to a different state. This woman was excommunicated, never allowed to speak to her sister again. Her sister didn't speak to her again, torn them apart for years. This happened all the time. She was constantly excommunicating fathers, children, not usually the women for some reason. She kept them in. One man who got tired of paying for all of her really expensive vacations, paid for one vacation. And then the next time she wanted to go immediately back to Italy. And he was like, yeah, I've given you enough money. I can't give you another $5,000. I don't have it. I am a working class person. And she was like, well, I need you to pay for part of my vacation, but also I need you to send your wife and your daughter with me. And he was like, my wife's an adult. She can go if she wants. My daughter is 16. I'm not paying another $5,000 for my daughter to go. And she was like, well, God thinks differently, so you need to pay for it. And he was like, yeah, I'm not going to. So she excommunicated him. The wife divorced him. The children, it's been 13 years since he's talked to his daughter.
Oh, my. All right.
Yes. Yeah. So other group members also clashed with her and were asked to leave. So this is just kind of, that's kind of the threat that hangs over, is she's very excommunicate-y. And people really believe that if they are excommunicated, you know, they'll die because the apocalypse is coming. Don't forget. And she's the prophet that's going to save them.
Yeah.
The person who told her boyfriend she was leaving, Cheryl, emailed her and said, you had no right, no authority to take what is mine, a prophet, and to give it to someone else. You used my revelations and truth as if they were your own and gave them to darkness. Now they will be used against us. Cheryl also told her followers that she could read all their thoughts, which they also believed. So one of her followers, who was a teenager at the time, and you know her family was in the group, she said that she would record her doubts onto her phone and play them back to her because she didn't have anybody she could tell about her doubts that wouldn't rat her out.
Right.
So she would record them on her phone and play them back to her so that she could feel like somebody was validating her, so she could hear feedback.
I've done that.
I think no, that's lie. Really smart. I
honestly,
really, it hasn't occurred to me. I think that's smart.
We've actually converged here. This is a thing I do if I have like a while before I have another therapy appointment and I just need to talk something out. I start the voice memo recording, little verbal journal entry, talk myself through, play it back. Sometimes I come up with a solution. Sometimes I don't, and I just breathe for a while. It's great. I love it.
That's really like beautiful and sweet and brilliant. I love it.
Thank you. I didn't expect to have this commonality, but I do think it's a great moment to seize it and say, if you're the kind of person that likes to process auditorily and you're tired of, you know, bothering the people that live with you or that you see frequently, try talking to yourself. I also like to address myself by name. I find that very helpful. I like to say like, hi, future Amryn. Here's a little note I'm making for you. And it's really sweet. And sometimes I cry. I listen to one from 2018 the other day, and it did make me tear up because I said in it like, hey, future Amryn, I'm having kind of a tough time right now, but I hope you're doing good. And I was like, I am doing good. And I was teared up.
That's like so much self-love.
It was. It was really special. It's never too late. Obviously, I'm so young to be saying this, but it's never like too late in the moment to start investing in self-love things for yourself in the future, is what I would say as a really random, totally off-base comment, because I started doing this stuff about 2018, where I really started investing in self-love for myself because I didn't feel a lot of it and I didn't see returns for a long time, and I'm starting to feel them now. That's really cool.
You guys, everything else we're saying is not actually that important, but what Amryn just said is really important. So that's what you should take away from this episode.
Aww. Yeah. Speak love to yourself. It's really speak sweet. Love. Write yourself a little love letter if that's how you want to do it, or speak a little love over yourself. Aww. And don't join any crazy cat cults. There's nice. My segue back in.
All right. We're back in. So at the same time that all these inside problems were going on and she's marrying everybody and taking everybody's money and excommunicating people, on the outside, she's starting to have former followers who she's excommunicated. So they're starting public blogs. They're starting to call it a cult. This really freaks her out. And so she starts getting really paranoid. She starts telling her people that there are government operatives in black cars outside her house and following her everywhere. She banished cell phones from the sanctuary, which actually I think sounds great. I would love a sanctuary free of cell phones.
Yes.
She starts making people dig bunkers and create what, have you heard the term bug out bags?
Yes, I have. Yeah. Of course.
It's a survivalist thing.
It is.
She had all of her people have bug out bags, which is like, if you don't know, it's a bag. I hate the name. It's just, I don't like it. But it's a bag that has like your survival shit in it. So like if the house is on fire or the feds are coming or the zombies are here, it's got like your drinkable water and your, you know, canned food and your knife and, you know, whatever else you, your waterproof matches. And it's your survival kit to run off into the woods. So she makes everybody have those because now we're getting really end timesy, right? They've got their bug out bags. They've got their survival stuff. The world's closing in on them. Actually, all that's happened is that some people have started a blog.
Okay.
that's the entirety of what's happened. But she's like, it's coming down. So in reaction to that, she gets very end of the worldy, very bunkery. And in 2013, she closes the church to outsiders.
Oh.
Now, enter the cats. We're finally here.
The doors are closed. The cats are out.
Now, in all of this commotion, her cat dies.
Oh,
her cat, Eva, dies. She saw the cat's death as a sign that she should start her own cat rescue. So she starts her own cat rescue and tells her people, like, by now they're already vegans. They're already, like, new agey. So she's like, this is how we worship Mother Earth and we caretake and all of that.
Of course.
She says... she says to her followers that if you don't take care of the cats, you will experience total annihilation.
Total annihilation. Apocalypse meow. Full circle.
Apocalypse meow.
Adorable.
Followers had more than 40 cats in each of their homes.
What?
That's what I said.
Okay, also, I didn't realize how severe we were talking here. I thought you meant like everybody, because I would be kind of into it if the, obviously there's too many of the other things I'm already out for, but I'd be kind of into it if everybody got like between one and five cats. Five cats is a lot of cats, but if you got between one and five cats to have in your home, and it was sort of like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, right? You had like your cat, and that was like your church cat, and it represents your relationship. I think that'd be very cute. The reference there is that there's a love plant in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days for the listeners, if you don't know. And then he has to keep the love plant alive or else their relationship is dying. So classic. That's classic moment. Yes, of course. We've all been there, ladies. Am I right? I have multiple love plants in the house now. If any plant dies in my house, I assume my relationship is over. I'm just kidding. But yes, I would be down with that cat situation for sure if it was just like a selection of cats. Now I'm out again because there is such a thing as too many cats in one house.
If there were a max of five cats, I would actually join this cult with full knowledge that was a cult with all my misgivings. Only because what a great like excuse to have five cats. Like, I'm not a crazy cat lady.
No. It's religious. You don't understand, actually. This is because... well, you see, let's. Do you have time to sit down? Come in.
Have you met my Lord and Savior? These five cats.
Yeah. Have you heard of Mary Magdalene? Because we're going to go down a real rabbit hole with that one.
So each family had more than 40 cats in their homes, which don't even get me started on what that litter box situation looks like. Many of these cats were very sick, had FIV, had like things that
cat
would be put down for. So they would have to, people were having to get up around the clock to nurse kittens, to nurse sick animals, to give them their medicines. Yeah. Sometimes they would have to have a clean room for very sick cats where they would put on all protective gear, get up at 3 a.m., bleach themselves, come into the protective, take care of the really sick cats who really just should have been put down. That's sad, but true.
Honestly, no, it's less humane to keep suffering animals alive for sure.
Yeah. But they would do this around the clock. So they were not getting any. These are still working class people who are giving all their money to this. And now they're taking care of 40 cats. They were also required to make sure that the cats ate before their children because they had to revere the cats. Here's
an email. Into it. Kind of like that one.
I think that children would write a memoir about you.
Of course, like I don't actually, like obviously I want both the animals and the kids. I think that's why I'm okay with it, is because I want both of them to be fed at like a good frequency. So ideally they're just both getting fed a normal amount. But I do just love the concept of, I don't know, like the kids like feeding the cats ahead of time and then being like, Mom, okay, we fed the cats. We're hungry.
Right. I'm so hungry, Mom.
Please.
Mom's like, I don't know, cats. So here's an email that Cheryl sent to her followers. Eva's Eden is not a social gathering hour. it's the temple of God. You are to enter it. Oh, so Eva's Eden is the name of the cat shelter that they opened. Okay. Sorry.
Yes.
Eva's Eden is not a social gathering hour. It is the temple of God. You are to enter with reverence for what is sealed within its foundation and walls and within every single feline. You are to enter with awe. You are to see each customer in there with discernment. Are they a chosen customer?
Oh,
caring for the cats. So that was one of her emails. I'll explain that more in a minute.
Right. Okay.
Caring for the cats accomplished two goals. It builds up good karma by doing good deeds, and it also prepares them for the apocalypse. Because get ready for this. Here's why the cats are sacred. The cats are, in fact, there are 144,000 of them. Perhaps this is a number you've heard before.
I have.
Every cult has to work in the number 144,000.
It's required.
It's
it's right before your signature on the cult leader line. It says must work in 144,000 PS.
Every single time will not do without.
You haven't heard about a cult that hasn't, right? That's because they were taken out. All right.
Right.
They were taken out by a big cult. Mm-hmm. That was the not selected name for the podcast. Big cult.
Big cult. So there are 144,000 cats.
Okay.
If Eva's Eden is taking in a cat, by definition, that cat is one of the 144,000.
Mm.
They are all secret hiding angels. All of these cats are actually secret angels. There are 144,000
secret hiding angels. Yes.
At the point of apocalypse, they will physically transform from being cats to being protective angels and save you from the apocalypse.
Oh, now, but why would you need 40 then? 40 angels.
144,000 is a lot of cats. So
it is, and they close the membership, right? Like, I'm just trying to keep up. So, like,
right. Why? And it's not that big of a cult. She's got like a few dozen families.
So these people, like, how much celestial help are you looking for here per person? Like, I just am not, the measurement system is a little off.
They've got to flux through 144,000. And to be clear.
Oh, I see.
When the cats transform physically into fighting warrior angels, they're not going to protect the family who adopted them. They're coming back to protect you. So you have got to, that's why she said, you have to see the customers with discernment. Are they chosen? Because if these people let a cat die on their watch, well, you just lost one of the angels that's going to.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm following. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So Cheryl told her followers, as long as you take care of them, then in your time of need, they will transform and take care of you.
I love that.
At this point, they make a complete exodus from Washington State because they've developed a bad reputation there. And they go to Tennessee. The other reason that they do this is that she closes the door on her daughter's relationship with her father. The moment her daughter turns 18, she sneaks out of the house in the middle of the night, which is entirely for drama. Nobody was like hounding her, but it's all drama if they sneak out in the middle of the night. So they sneak out in the middle of the night. She tells her followers, so before they go to Tennessee, she tells her followers, we have to leave Washington. We have to go to Alaska, right?
Okay.
Her goal is A, to drop out of the spotlight where she's getting bad press, and B, to hide her children from their dad because she's a dick, right?
Right.
So those are her two goals. So initially she tells her people, we have to leave here, and the only safe place for us in the world is Alaska. We all have to go to Alaska.
Oh.
So they're like, oh, okay, I guess we're all moving to Alaska. And they're like, but why though? And she says, I was in Scotland breaking strongholds, and I made a deal with a Scottish demon there. So this demon named, you know, blah, 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 comes to me and says, I will... Because I'm so powerful, I'm about to banish this demon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the demon says, I'll make a bargain with you. And then she, as an all-powerful deity, rather than saying, no, demon, I just banish you, she's like, oh, a bargain, what you got? So he says to her, I'll give you Scotland, but you have to give me the Highlands because the Highlands are my people, which is also really dicky, right? Like, I guess the people in the Highlands can just get fucked.
In the world, are you? That's actually really funny because I am Scottish and I heard so this is actually personal to me. That's so funny. She gave them to the devil. All right, got it. Moving on.
Yeah, great. And my understanding is I am a Highlands.
My understanding as well. I'm not 100% sure of that, but yeah. So, okay, fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So, how dare you, Cheryl Ruffin?
Yeah,
so,
now it's between you and I, Cheryl.
And this demon.
And the demon. I don't know if I want to incorporate the demon in my fight here.
Well, right. He seems like a reasonable guy because he does hammer out a plan with her. So,
okay. Right, you're good. You're right.
So she makes a deal with this demon. He says, I'll give you Scotland, but I want to keep the Highlands because that's where all my demon people are. And she's like, deal. And I'll give you America, but not Alaska. And he's like, deal, which I think that was a shitty deal on her end. That's quite the selling of the Louisiana Purchase, in my opinion.
That's a big call. And my question is her thought there global warming? Because that's really the only reason I could ever think that you would select Alaska as the only part of America that you would be taking, because so much of it is wild and untouchable. Like, not untouchable, but like unlivable.
Well, I think she, didn't think this through a lot. And I think and she was already in northern Washington, right? So
true.
She is in some colder climes. I think that what she was thinking was, this place seems very remote and survivalist-y, which is what I'm into.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so yeah, following.
Also, like, I think she was so vengeful toward her ex-husband that she liked the idea of like, well, your kids live in fucking Alaska now.
Yeah, I could see that as well. Yeah, that certainly makes sense.
So for some reason, the Alaska thing didn't follow through. Like, basically, even though her followers at this point are kissing her feet, drinking her blood, when she was like, and you have to live in Alaska, they were like,
They weren't so on that plane. Okay,
So she shifted it. And she said, okay, well, I did unstronghold Scotland. We'll all move to Scotland. Okay. So then they spent like almost a year all trying to figure out how they could move to Scotland. But guess what? Scotland's a different country and it requires a lot of visas, and you can't just move everybody over to Scotland.
It really is a popular spot. They can't just let anybody immigrate there immediately if they just want to.
Especially a cat worshiping weirdo church, which I feel like Scotland would not be down for. So eventually that just didn't work out. But the reason she changed her name from Cheryl Walker to Cheryl Ruthven is that Ruthven is simply a Scottish name. And she thought she would have easier immigration odds if she had a Scottish last name. So that's why she changed her last name.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's now her name, but it was literally just to like cheat the immigration services and move to Scotland. Didn't work out. So then she says, okay, actually God says we're moving to Tennessee, but like, that's a hard stop. I'm done with arguing about this. Move us all to Tennessee. So they do. The whole cult packs up in the middle of the night, rushes out as if someone is chasing them, which is not happening.
No.
And they move to Tennessee, and she says, tell everyone that she says, lie to all your people. Tell them that the church has disbanded. There's no more Eva's Eden. I have gone to Scotland to serve God. And you're just moving there for whatever personal reason you want to make up. But it has nothing to do with the church, right?
Right.
Because she wants to drop out of the spotlight. They get down to Tennessee. She immediately opens another Eva's Eden animal shelter with the same name. So it might have worked out had she not foiled herself.
Could have happened too if she wouldn't have lost grasp. Yeah.
She is her own meddling kid in this scenario, and she outed herself.
Hilarious.
Yes. When she was moving down there, though, and she swore everybody to secrecy, she said, please don't make me regret opening the doors for you to come with me to Tennessee. I'm going to start over and have no one know anything about myself, the cult, or the church. That's a quote from her. She referred to her church as a cult.
Huh. Yeah. See, now that's the opposite of what they usually do. I don't need to restate this because we talk about this nearly every episode now. But usually the tactic is you say, no, we're not a cult. Right. We're just a group of people that like each other. Right, or we're like really celestially guided or something, you know, but this is not the move, my friend.
So now, as of today, Eva's Eden is located in Columbia, Tennessee. They're there right now. They do keep dropping out. Anytime a reporter comes, like when this reporter who wrote this article came to ask questions, they shut down their Facebook page and website the next day. So they also, as an animal shelter, they don't make any reference to being a religious organization. They don't, they just say, like, this is an animal shelter, we're volunteers. They describe themselves as a peaceful group devoted to Mother Nature and living in harmony. They foster dozens of kittens in their homes and host cat adoption events in their air-conditioned mobile cat playground. I will say, people say the animals are very well treated, so that's very nice. But at this point, as of right now, it says the only sign of their religious beliefs is the Eva's Eden logo, which features the outline of the Egyptian cat goddess Bastet.
Oh, that's kind of nice. Aesthetic win on that one.
Far cry from the evangelical roots that they started out
with.
They
certainly moved the whatever you would call it, the needle a long ways over there.
If you walked into our local Pentecostal church with a Bastet cat shirt, you would be herded right back out as a demon yourself.
Certainly, you would not be welcomed in to stay for the next service. Yeah, that's no, that's a big deviation.
Yeah. So, so then it says her daughter-in-law, Nicole Walker, because her sons are still in the group and her daughter's still in the group, they've since married. The father has never spoken to his children in all this time, which really sucks. So her in-law children are running the shelter. It says when contacted for an interview about their religious beliefs, shelter manager Nicole Walker said in an email that she would have to contact the FBI, the local sheriff, and their lawyer before commenting. Thank you for understanding. I'll get back to you as soon as possible, she said. And then she took down the Facebook and the website. Since moving to Tennessee, they have befriended and illegally funded the local law enforcement. So that when parents missing their children contact and ask the law enforcement to do welfare checks on their children, the local law enforcement refuse.
Oh.
Yep. That's so Tennessee really was a good awful. Choice.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Her mother, who is also one of her most devoted followers, her mother is her devoted follower. That's extra weird to me. I feel like your mom might be on to you, but says to media that her daughter is no longer a pastor and that the church no longer exists and all they want to do now is rescue cats. So as of today, they are still an existing group. The people within the group believe that the cats they're fostering are going to physically transform into avenging angels and save them from the very near apocalypse. They are giving all of their money to Cheryl Ruthven. They are still funding her international vacays. Her ex-husband is still giving her a whole bunch of money. She now has offshore accounts and lots of investments in silver and gold. So she's doing very well. They are still kind of at subsistence level. They all still have 40 cats in their houses and they all think they'll die if they leave her and they, or if they don't take care of these cats, but they're just living their lives doing this thing. I don't know if that deserves intervention or not. In a way, they think they're very, very, very trapped. They think they will die outside of this. And I don't think that any of them love fostering 40 cats in their house or giving away all their money. No. Or cutting off their family members, which they have all done. Right. But then again, they're all doing it. So just a thing that I read in one of these articles, Ben Zeller, who is assistant professor of religion at Lake Forest College, says, I thought this was interesting. In a group like Eva's Eden, follower members are more often tied to the leader than to the theology. And so they'll go as far down a path as there is no stopping the path because theology can be debated, but a leader cannot. Right. So like if you go to the Amish or the 12 tribes and you start rising in ranks and saying, oh, I'm a prophet, but you break from the theology, they'll cut you off because the theology is core. But when a cult is centered around a leader as opposed to a theology, the leader can say anything and you'll continue going because it's the leader who's the core and not the theology. So yes, they went from Pentecostals in their church to cat and woman worshiping people in Tennessee. And that is the story of Eva's Eden.
Wow.
Amryn.
Wow.
Wow. Cat cult. Who loves a kitty? Who loves a kitty?
They're so cute. The kitty. They're so cute.
They're so furry and they're so sweet.
They are so furry and they are so sweet. And if this cult was a reverse, if we could Uno reverse this cult in terms of chronology and they could start on this and then go like start as just like a group. This is true. Just a group rescuing cats. That would get me in a heartbeat. I'd be like, oh yeah. Like some good marketing, some good volunteerism. I would be like, let me in there. And then I'd be involved. And then if the community was good enough, then I might be staying. And then we got some Egyptian lore. We got Tai Chi maybe. Mm. We got a little bit of this and that. I'm staying. I'm interested. There's some other weird buzz going on with the leadership, but I'm listening. And then slowly we become messianic and evangelical. See,
oh, they get you all the way.
They would get me all the way in. I think potentially I could be on that ride the whole time. However, it's just like totally impossible to go the other way for me because I couldn't follow you through all these theological changes. Getting less extreme for me, that's strange, right? Like it literally is losing, like they're like shedding layers as they go. And I'm like, well, I would be like, isn't it all over now? Isn't everything we said pointless? Because it's all not, you changed everything, Cheryl.
We've distilled it down to cats now. We're just at cats.
It's just cats, which I can agree is like a universal truth, cats. But like also, no, it's just not enough. It doesn't have enough legs for me in the end. So that's what I would say is like, there are elements here that catch me and the story is amazing. Love to hear the story and thank you for telling it. But I can't say I could ever join this in the literal way that it transpired because I don't know that there would ever be an entry point where the barrier would be low enough for me.
Right. I think the same thing, you know, and again, like 40 cats is too fucking many cats.
It's so many cats. Also, I see myself and I said, I probably said this on the Teal Swan episode and I'm only being sort of facetious. I love myself. I'm not arrogant, but I do love myself. I don't know how I would do in a group where there was just another woman who was just constantly like, it's me. I'm the woman that matters. I don't know. I kind of need to share the love a little bit. Like, I have no problem being like, that over there is the woman that matters.
Yeah.
The person. I'll share it. No problem.
Yeah.
But I don't think, occupy the space with another woman who is like, the light is only mine. Even if they were like, I'm a prophetess, I just simply would be like, but me too. You know, like, ooh.
You're right.
Guess what? I just had a vision, baby. Let's go. You know, I unfortunately am competitive in that way.
No, you're absolutely right. We don't have time for this in this episode, but remind me another time. I have a very solid theory about alpha females.
Good. I'm literally writing it on my podcast notes. Alpha females. We'll talk about it. I do want to really quickly say that I wrote my question down for the end, which was, and I want to bring that up. Would it be worse to be a follower or to be her? I have a definitive answer and it's going to be meatier than would I join the cult. So I want to share it really quick. I think it's better to be her because of the Italian vacations and the child support and the whole, you know, just doing whatever you want all the time. The followers having the 40 cats and not getting the vacations, all of those things certainly detract for me. So I do feel like having heard the story from you now, even though I wouldn't want to be as deluded, I wouldn't want to be Cheryl. I'm sorry, Cheryl. But really, my question is like the t-shirt from this episode is just really Cheryl? ? That's it. That's literally all. Because strange choices throughout.
Once you broke it down to business hours as opposed to round the clock cult leader, I completely agree with you. I think being round the clock, like oh, I bear the weight of the world and the fucking Magdalene, blah de blah, me and the cats. I wouldn't enjoy that identity. That would,
no,
ugh, it's too much.
It's weighty. It's weighty. It reincarnated any person of importance is a role I would never self assign, you know, like, yeah. I wouldn't want to wake up one day and see some pots and be like, oh my, I'm Mary Magdalene. That doesn't sound good to me. It really doesn't, you know?
Even if I legit woke up and had that realization, I'd shelve it. I'd be like,
I'd probably gaslight myself out of it. I'd be like, no, there's no way. You know, like, you're pretty cool, but not that cool. My anxiety would check me out the other way. I said my ego would bring me up, then this would take it down. So a little balance.
I'm with you. Okay, well, there is no aesthetic to speak of. These are just people wearing people clothes. I think they even dropped the denim skirts, so we really have nothing.
Nothing.
Oh, well, actually, I'm sorry. There's very much an identifiable aesthetic, and it's called cat hair.
It is called cat hair. Yeah, aesthetic's going to be rated real low for me because of the fact there isn't one to be found, and the cat hair, literally just that, the thought of how much cat hair would have and the smell, like, because like, I know my cat lovers and my cat owners, we know about the litter situation. We like, you know, you got to do the litter thing. You already mentioned, you don't want to even think about that. But for me, I'm more thinking about like the, what is it? Gosh, it's like it's like dander, right? That you get from cats. Yeah. And it's like this certain smell, and it kind of smells a little damp all the time. And if you're not on it as a pet owner with cleaning, you can start to smell that. You'll smell it. Sometimes I smell it when I'm like cleaning my vacuum out, for instance. And that would be everywhere. That was a long-winded way to say the aesthetic rating is, well, it's zero.
Yeah.
It's zero. I was going to say one, but it has to go full zero.
I forgot to mention in this, one of the families who since left says that they had a child who was highly allergic to cats and was in the emergency room like every other day for his asthma. And the leader was just like, I don't know, you should stop having asthma. You're not, like, your faith isn't good enough.
They went the asthma as a sign of weakness route. Not having a million cats in a home might be causing asthma in this poor developing child.
Very popular choice for a cult leader.
Can't say I'm super surprised.
No, but none of us can.
Yeah. Okay.
So, that's what I know. So we're a zero on aesthetic. I think wackadooiness, I'm fairly high.
But yeah, I have to give him I'm going to probably give him a 7. It's not that wackadooey.
Yeah,
but it is pretty wacky. I mean, this is far. 8, it might be fair, because this is the full 9 yards of, like, the cats are, no, it's crazy. It's 8, because the cats are the 144,000, and they are going to transform bodily into celestial beings that then save the people. No, it's an 8. It may even be a 9. This may be one of the craziest ones we've ever talked about.
It's also the journey. Right? It's not these were a bunch of hippies that were like, let's do this cat cult. It was a bunch of Pentecostals who evolved into worshipers of Egyptian gods.
Yeah, no, it's an 8 for me too. It's a revised 8 for me. In fact, I don't even know if we'll ever be able to talk about anything crazier. Is it wrong not to give it a 10? I just
give it freely.
I think it may be, honestly, yeah, I'm going to have to go up. I think I was way too timid. I'm always cynical, but I think I have to give this my first wackadooey 10 I think it's my first 10. I don't know. Just because of the cat thing, just the ends, literally, like, it's the journey. But for the 10 for me is that the cats are angels that will save us from the end times.
So is it that they worship cats and that's their sacred thing? Or is it that the cats will physically morph into angels?
It's Avengers. The cats physically morphing into angel Avengers for me. Yeah. That's crazy to me. I don't think it's weird. Like, it's really not a stretch for me. Because, like, I was raised in the evangelical way, right? And Jesus, we see, Jesus very much said, what you do to the least of these, you do unto me, right? So for me, the concept of how you treat an animal, even if that is a stretch of the scripture, and I acknowledge it is, but I felt that was still the case. How you treat any living thing, I felt what it was a representation of your faith and practice, from human beings to like fish eggs. So I could see it is what I'm saying. I could see the connection between like how we treat these cats really matters to the divinity. Mm-hmm. What I can't see is is like a cat's thighs shifting back. It stands up, one arm out, another arm out, swing in the back. Bam, there goes a feather. You know, like that, that's the 10 for me. And you're welcome, everyone, for that visual.
Well, now that I pictured it that way, I'm back in.
You're back. You know what? I want to be there for it. I want to believe, baby, just like Christmas. Yeah, okay. But it, yeah, so that's my 10. No, it's going to be wow, this is the craziest rating of all time. Zero aesthetic, 10 wackadooey zaniosity rating here. And a definitive, no, I would not join. And a question mark, maybe I would take over leading this group if they would send me to Italy and send me all the child support money. It does sound like I could just focus on being my prettiest self all the time if this was the situation.
Amarin, you could go blonde and waltz right in.
I could go blonde. And I could maintain that hair color if they were paying me that kind of money.
Listen, here's what you do. Yes. You maintain the hair color. You take the cat max down to 28.
28. See?
They will usher you in.
I think I may have a lower barrier for entry than I initially thought. Well, stay tuned, listeners. Things, they are changing.
Apocalypse Amarin.
Amarin meow. Oh man, that's me running for president 2024. No, it's not. Okay, so any other questions we have for the wrap of the pod? This is a longer episode. I like to see it.
It is. I don't know cats. What to tell you guys. It's cats. So I think I'm wrapped up. I think after this, I'm going to watch a lot of cat videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
I'm going to double check that my cats feel okay with me in case they are secret avenging angels. That's what I'm going to do with my day. Amarin, you?
Yeah, I actually straight up am going to go check in with my cat. We're just going to have a talk. I'm going to make sure things are good. I'm going to say, are you stretching enough? Are you fed enough? And is there anything I should adjust spiritually in my life to better align with what we should be up to? And I'll let you know if she says anything. What I would advise for our listeners, just kidding.
Yeah.
What I would request for our listeners that I wanted to mention in this episode is if you are one of our listeners that has made it thus far in this journey, and you want to hop over to literally wherever you're listening and give us a review, love that. Please do that. I don't often beg and plead, and I'm not begging and pleading now, but things are pretty serious between us at season 2. And things are heating up outside and in the air. And so I thought maybe you could just drop us a little review and make it official. Lots of love. That's all. Mm-hmm. My only request this week.
Okay, everybody, hug your cats.
Yes.
Make sure you guys are cool.
Check in. Get that ticket looked at for heaven, you know. Assess it.
Yeah, we'll cult it up with you next week. Namaste.
Namaste.
I join. Ooh, cults I join.
If you are loving Cults I Join and want to help us share the fun, here are some actions you can take. Subscribe and share the show on any podcast platform. Rate and review us on Google. This keeps us visible and gives an angel its wings. Or at least that's what our guru says. Follow us at Cults I Join on the .com, the Facebook, and the Insta, and then hit us there with all your comments, discussions, and questions. We really do love hearing what you think. Finally, a huge thank you to our co-creators. Editing and post-production is by DeverWeb, and the biggest thanks to the incomparable Miss Devin Spruill, our theme song creator and performer. You should go soak up her music right now. And that's it, y'all. Thanks for listening, and happy culting!
Cults I Join.